Everybody needs to ask Carla tonight why she brought a pair of earplugs. just if you get the chance, just do that. Tonight we're going to be discussing the topic of a way to escape. A way to escape. We all experience things in our lives that hurt us. And I want you all to think back to a time, some situation that you were in where you came out feeling emotionally or physically drained, just exhausted. Maybe it was a failed relationship. Maybe it was a failed business venture, something like that. Now, when we go through something like that, we often have this thought, man, I don't know if I'd make that same decision again. I don't know if I would have done that if I knew how this would turn out. I wish I knew then what I know now. Another way we say it, hindsight is 20/20. We learn a lot over our lifetime, and sometimes we learn things through experience, and that's great. It's good for us. We learn empathy, patience, forbearing, endurance. Even Christ learned that way. Though he were a son, he learned obedience by the things that he suffered. But we look at this, and we got to ask ourselves, is there an easier way to learn? Because that's a hard way to learn sometimes. Especially when we're thinking about sin. You know, there's got to be a better way to learn with sin than to have to experience it. You know, constantly we are attacked by an adversary. He's described as a roaring lion walking about, just seeking whom he may devour. He's relentless and he's persistent. And he's looking for every weakness that we have just for the right time to attack. And he uses things in our life. We know these well. The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. He uses those things to attack us and to get us. Turn, if you would, to James chapter 1. And we'll see how he uses these things. James chapter 1, beginning verse 12. James writes, "Blessed is the man that endures temptations, for when he is tried, he shall receive the crown of life, which the Lord has promised to them that love him." That's what we all want. The crown of life. "Let no man say when he is tempted, I am tempted of God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, neither tempteth he any man. But," this is how it works now, "every man is tempted when he is drawn away of his own lust and enticed. And when lust has conceived, it brings forth sin. And sin, when it is finished, brings forth death. Do not err, my beloved brethren." Satan uses the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, pride of life, and those things in our lives are what he uses to tempt us. And when that's conceived, when it is full grown, it draws us away, and when it's conceived, it brings forth sin, and that sin brings forth death. And that's, we don't want death. This word lust is used over and over. Well, what is it? It's not something we talk about all the time. Lust is an extreme desire, a strong wanting or longing to do something, especially if we're wanting to do something that's wrong. That's lust. We're lusting towards something. Satan uses the world to draw us away, and if we succumb to that, if we give in to that, we follow the flesh, it will destroy us. But fortunately, we have a choice. We don't have to give in. There is another way. Turn, if you would, to Galatians chapter 5. Galatians 5, beginning of verse 16. "This I say, walk in the Spirit, and you will not fulfill the lust of the flesh." So there we have an option already. "If the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, these are contrary one to the other, so that you cannot do things that you would. But if you be led by the Spirit, you are not under the law." We have this problem with these lusts, and they can pull us away from our true goals. But there's a way. If we walk in the Spirit, we won't fulfill the lust of the flesh. Well, what do these lusts look like? If we continue, the works of the flesh, if we lust and we're enticed and we do the works of the flesh that cause us to sin, what do these works look like? Well, they're manifest. They're easily seen. What are they? Adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, and things that look like these things. Now get this. These things of which I tell you before, as I have also told you in the past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of life. Satan puts these things in front of us, and if we work those works of the flesh, we will not inherit the kingdom of life. And that's just the plain truth of the matter. So these things we need to really look at. We need to see, how do we avoid these things? How do we avoid sin? Hopefully we don't think we have to commit them to understand them. Hopefully we don't think we have to murder to avoid it. Okay? What can we do to avoid them? What knowledge can we get to avoid these things? Proverbs 22 verse 3 says, the prudent sees danger and he hides. He sees it and he hides himself. But the simple, they go after it. So if we can see danger and hide, certainly we don't have to experience it. We can be smart enough to see something that's dangerous and we can go hide from it. We can run away from it. Proverbs 26:11 says, like a dog that returns to his vomit is a fool who repeats his folly. We're familiar with that. And when we see this, we see a dog do this, we find it repulsive, right? Well, what if we see a dog, see another dog vomit, and he goes eats that? That would be as equally as repulsive. Well, if we see somebody sin a sin, and then we just commit that same thing, we're doing the same thing. That's not something that we want to do. We can learn from fools' folly. We don't have to be the fools ourselves. So do we have some examples we can learn from? Certainly we do. And we're going to look at an example tonight. Turn, if you would, to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. We're going to stay here quite a while. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. The Old Testament is so important because we're given so many examples that we can learn from. 1 Corinthians 10, beginning verse 1. Moreover, brethren, I would not that ye should be ignorant how that our fathers were under the cloud and passed through the sea and were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea and did eat the same spiritual meat and did all drink the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. But with many of them, God was not well pleased. So we have this example here in front of us of the Old Testament, the children of Israel. And let's look and see what it's talking about. They were under the cloud and they passed through the sea. Do we remember what this is talking about? Remember the children of Israel, they were in Egypt. And just remember what they saw while they were there. They saw all the plagues. They saw the hail, the locusts. They saw the life-giving Nile turn to blood. They saw the death of the cattle and the frogs and the lice and all these things. And they saw the death of the firstborn. And they saw the God of heaven take and make the most powerful man in the world release them. That's what they saw. And they saw it through these wonderful works that he did. And as they left Egypt, he didn't leave them leaderless. They had Moses, but they had something else. They had a cloud to lead them during the day. And during the night, just think about what they had. No, they didn't have street lights and stuff like we have. It's pitch black. They've got a pillar of fire leading them. They had them in front of them all the time. Okay? They get out, they get by sea. Oh no, Pharaoh's coming after us. What are we going to do? They see Moses raise up his arms and they see the water stand up. And they say, well, that's great. How are we going to get across there? We're going to sink in the mud. No, it's dry. They saw these things. It happened straight in front of them. This is what they're seeing. They were under the cloud and they passed through the sea. If we could see that, would that build our faith? Would that make us strong Christians? Well, we see it, right? We see it right here. We can read it. It happened. It's right here. Verse 3, they did all eat the same spiritual meat. Remember what they did? They get out, they start complaining. Oh, they start complaining. Exodus 16, you know, they're out here in the wilderness. Oh, I remember those pots of flesh we had when we were in Egypt. Oh, I wish we had those. We're hungry. We're hungry. And they murmur and they complain. And what'd God do? He made it where they had bread and quail comes from heaven every day. He provided for them. Next verse, they all drank the spiritual drink. They drank of that spiritual rock that followed them. That rock was Christ. Remember the rock that they drank from? They murmured. We're thirsty. What'd they do? God said, smite the rock. And it brought forth water. when they were there, when they're murmuring and they're complaining, this is something they said. They said, "Is the Lord even among us? Is the Lord even among us?" Verse 5, God was not well pleased with them, for they were overthrown in the wilderness. Remember how they were overthrown? Remember they come through all of that? They see in all of these things. They see Mount Sinai, the mountain that it's being burned with fire because the presence of God is there. And they say, "Moses, you go over there. You talk to him. We're going over here." They saw all of that. Then they marched their way up to the land, right? To take the land. They send in the 12 spies. What happens? Two of them say, "Let's go. Let's take that land." But the other two come out and they say, "We can't take that. We're like grasshoppers in the sight of these people. They're giants. We cannot do it." And look what they say. Numbers 13 and 14. Let's see. Numbers 14. All the congregation lift up their voices and they cried, and the people wept at night. And all the children of Israel murmured against the Moses and against Aaron. And the whole congregation said to them, "Would God that we have died in the land of Egypt, or would God that we have died in this wilderness? And why has the Lord brought us this land to fall by the sword, that our wives and our children should be prey? Were it not better for us to return into Egypt?" After all this that they've seen, wouldn't it be better for us to go back to where we were, to be under in subjection to this man and all this idolatry and everything that we had to live under? Wouldn't it be better? And they said, "Let us make another captain. Let us return to Egypt." Moses and Aaron fell on their faces before all the assembly of the congregation, the children of Israel. And Joshua and the son of Nun and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, which are them searched the land, they rent their clothes. And they spake unto all the company of the children of Israel, saying, "The land which we pass through to search is exceedingly good. And if the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only rebel not against the Lord, neither fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their defense is departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Fear them not." But all the congregation bade stone them with stones. And the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of the congregation before all the children of Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, "How long will this people provoke me? And how long will they e'er believe me? For the signs which I had showed among them, I will smite them with pestilence and will disinherit them." Everything they saw, and they still wanted to reject God. Back in 1 Corinthians 10, God was not pleased with some of them because they perished in the wilderness. Verse 6, now, 1 Corinthians 10, 6. "Now these things were our example." Why? "To the intent that we should not lust after evil things." Lust, remember what that is? It's Satan's tool to get us where we don't inherit the kingdom of God. "These things were examples, because they lusted after evil things." Don't do that as they lusted. Verse 7. "Neither be idolaters, as were some of them, as it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play." When did they do this? When Moses was on the mountain. The people were down there doing what? Building a calf. Give glory to that thing. It represents God. That's how far away their mind was and how it had been changed under the religions that they had lived under. Don't be idolaters. Verse 8, "Neither let us commit fornication, as some of them committed and fell in one day, 23,000. The children of Israel have committed fornication with the daughters and the women of Moab. And they had gone after the Baal, the gods of those people. And what did God do? He sent a plague among the people. And he's wiping them out. And to stop that plague, Phinehas, you remember, throws a spear through one of the women of Moab into one of the men of Israel, and it stopped the plague. It's an example. Don't commit fornication, you Corinthians. Verse 9, "Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed of the serpent." When they're tempted, they tempt Christ, they were saying, they were murmuring again. And they were saying, "Our soul despises this bread," the bread that God is giving them every day. That they're tempting God. And God sent serpents among them, remember? And fiery serpents. And Moses had to make the brazen serpent. And if they looked on that, they would be saved. Don't tempt Christ, as they also tempted and were destroyed. Verse 10, neither murmur, as some of them also murmured and were destroyed of the destroyer. We've already talked about that. Now, verse 11, all these things happened unto them for examples. They're written for our admonition, upon whom the end of the world are come. Okay, all these things are examples. They were examples to the Corinthians. That's who he's writing to here. But they're examples to us. Now, we think about the people in Corinth. Why did they need the examples? Don't commit idolatry. Don't submit to these lusts. Don't commit fornication. Why? Because they're in a place that is overrun with idolatry. The temple of Aphrodite was there in Corinth, the goddess of love. The temple of Poseidon was there. And this is a seaport for sailors. They come in here and they engage in these religious activity that involve fornication and call it worship. This is what the church is in the middle of. Okay? But remember the examples, you Corinthians, and don't lust after evil things as they lusted. Well, how do we do that? The escape. How do we do that? The escape. We get to verse 12. Wherefore, let him that thinks he stands take heed lest he falls. The first thing we got to do is check ourselves. We need to look at ourselves and say, am I overcome with the world? Do I even recognize that? Corinthians, that's who he's talking to. You're in the midst of all this idolatry. Better take a look at yourself. Are you involved in all that idolatry or not? Take heed to yourself. You might be standing, but you really might be falling. You think you're standing, but you might be falling. Verse 13, there's no temptation taken to you, but such as is common to man. This temptations that they're having is the same thing as these examples. Even way back in the old day of children of Israel. There's no temptation. None of this is new, but God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you are able, but will, with the temptation, also make a way to escape, that you may able to bear it. You may be able to bear it. God makes a way for us to escape. What is it? Verse 14. Wherefore, my dearly beloved, what does he say? Flee. Run away. We always have that escape. Get away from sin. Get away. God has always made that available. It's always there. Flee. We always have the opportunity to run. And what does Paul do? He shows these Corinthians that. Even if you're in this place where it's just overrun with idolatry, fornication, you always have the option to get out of here, to leave, to flee from it. He says, I speak as to wise men, judge what I say. We need to check ourselves, and we need to know if we need to flee or not. Proverbs 4, beginning in 14, says it like this. Enter not into the way of the wicked, number one. Two, do not go in the way of evil men. Three, avoid it. Four, pass not by it. Five, turn away from it. Six, pass away. Why? For they sleep not except they've done mischief. And their sleep is taken away unless they cause someone to fall. Wicked people, they won't even sleep unless they cause other people to fall. Don't go in that way. Don't follow that sin. Get away from it. Proverbs 1 says it like this, beginning of verse 10. My son, if sinners entice thee, remember what the lust does? It entices us. My son, if sinners entice thee, do not consent. If they say, come with us, let us lay wait for blood, let us lurk privately for innocent without cause, let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down to the pit. We shall find all precious substance. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast your lot in among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil and make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, and they lay wait for their own blood. They lurk privately for their own lives. Don't go in the way of sinners. Don't even get close to it. We got to flee. God gives us the opportunity. He makes a way to flee. Don't even go towards sin. Remember our adversary? He's waiting. He's waiting to get us, and he does that through our lust, through our want to be included. That's a lust. We want to be like everybody else. We want to feel that. We want to be like the world. But do we have the courage not to take that path? Instead, to take the way of escape. This pull of the world is strong. We want to be accepted. We want to be like others. But Proverbs 24 says, verse 1, "Be not thou envious against evil men, neither desire to be with them. For their heart studies destruction, and their lips talk of mischief." The world is strong, but we have a way to escape. Don't be that way. Flee from it if you got to. Christ said it like this, Matthew chapter 5, verse 3, verse 30. He says, "If your right hand offends you, cut it off and cast it from you." Get that picture in your mind. Most of us are right-handed. If it offends you, chop it off. Don't just do that. Pick it up, throw it away. That's what he says. "For it's profitable for you that one of your members should perish, and not that your whole body be cast in hell." This is Jesus saying this. Well, what's the context? Verse 27. "You have heard that it was said in them of old time, you shall not commit adultery." One of the Ten Commandments. But Jesus says, "But I say unto you, that whoever looks on a woman to," there it is, "lust after her, has committed adultery with her already in his heart." So what am I to do, Jesus? If your right eye offends you, in what way? If I'm looking at a woman to commit adultery, if your right eye offends you, pluck it out and cast it from thee. "For it's profitable for thee that one of your members should perish, and not that your whole body should be cast in hell." In Matthew 18, verse 7 through 9, he says it like this. "It's better for you to enter into life with one eye rather than having two eyes and to be cast into hellfire." Remember, they that do these things shall not inherit the kingdom of life, that are fulfilled by these lusts. These things are hard to hear, and they're hard to do. Cut off my hand? But we're to do whatever's necessary to get rid of sin. That's our way of escape. We are to flee from it, get rid of it, however we can. If we see sin, flee from it before we get involved with it. If something's helping us to sin, get rid of it. The children of Israel had this same opportunity. In Deuteronomy 7, y'all are almost there in Sunday morning class. Deuteronomy 7, 23. "The Lord God will deliver them unto thee, and you shall destroy them with the mighty destruction until they be destroyed. And he shall deliver their kings into your hand, and you shall destroy their name from under heaven. There shall be no man able to save before thee until you have destroyed them. Now get this, the graven images of their gods you will burn with fire. You will not desire the silver or gold that is on them, nor take it to thee, lest you be snared therein. For it's an abomination to the Lord thy God. Neither will you bring an abomination to your house, lest you be a cursed thing like it. But you shall utterly detest it, and you shall utterly abhor it, for it is a cursed thing." The children of Israel had the same opportunity. Get rid of the evil thing. But did they do it? Did they do it? Did they utterly drive out these things in their lives? No, they did not. And so normally we would be studying Hosea, as Joey says it. And what do we find out? Judah and Israel, they get taken in captivity. Why? Because they are wholly overtaken by idolatry. Hosea says, "My people are destroyed because of lack of knowledge." Because they didn't do what God just told them to do. Destroy the sin. Will we learn from their examples? That's why we have it. Joseph in Genesis 39. Remember that account? Potiphar reaches up, grabs his cloak, and says, "Lie with me." And what does he do? He takes off running. So fast that the picture you get is almost, in my mind, like a cartoon image. You just see the smoke of him running away, and she's standing there with his cloak still in her hand. He's running off naked. Now, we might think that's funny, but sin's a serious thing. When lust conceives, it brings forth sin. Sin brings forth death. They that do such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. It's a serious, serious matter. Joseph knew. He got away. He ran away. Sin has the ability to wrap us up, pull us in, and not let go. And we become a slave to that point that we don't even care, or if we don't even want to get away from it. It's that strong. And it can happen even if one is a Christian. Contrary to what a lot of people believe, they say we can't fall from grace. Absolutely we can. Hebrews 10, beginning in verse 25, 26, all of that. If we sin, willfully sin, after we've got the knowledge that there remains no more sacrifice for our sins, it's scary stuff. All the examples show us there's a way to escape. Some choose to take it, others don't. We see the results of both of those people. Now, will we learn from these or not? We want to learn from their examples so we don't have to experience these things. We don't have to get close to sin where it might pull us in. We don't want to do that. So what does this look like in our lives? What is the application of this in our lives? We can see clearly the children of Israel. We can sit here and say, why did they do those things? But what does it mean for us? Just as the children of Israel were traveling through the land, trying to get to the promised land, we're doing the same thing. We're traveling through this life, trying to get to the promised land, waiting to cross over the River Jordan into our home that has been promised to us. This world's not our home. We're just traveling through it. But on the way, the world's pulling at us constantly, constantly trying to trip us up. Satan's putting distractions everywhere in our way to try to make us stumble. I know everyone in here knows what we should do. Everybody's in here striving to do what Matthew 6:33 tells us to do, to put the kingdom first. We know what it means. We know it means the kingdom. It's more important than work. It's more important than school. It's more important than family. It's more important than job. It's more important than what I want, anything that I want. But we still struggle. We struggle bad because this world and the way it tries to pull us in, it's strong. It's strong. And it's relentless. It never stops. Because it's the things in this world that our adversary uses. We know what they are. We know what our priorities will be, but we struggle. We have to be very, very careful in our journey through this life that we do not allow our lust to take over. We have to take heed to ourselves. Stop. Check ourselves. Am I of the world? We need to ask ourselves that. That's what Paul was telling the Corinthians to do. Are you idolaters? Even though you're Christians, are you doing this? Have you been affected by all this stuff in your town? We recognize this. We recognize that we need to avoid sin and make sure that we don't get involved in things. When we talk about things like alcoholism, drug addiction, prostitution, gambling, things like that, big sins, we really recognize it when we talk about those things. But do we recognize it when we're talking about things that we don't think are so major? No, the children of Israel committed fornication. Massive number of them fell because of that. But they were also consumed, and God was not pleased with them because they were thirsty, and they murmured, and they were hungry, and they murmured. We wouldn't think that those are big deals. But what was the root of the bad thing they did because of that? They got hungry and they got thirsty and they said, we want to go back to the world. We want to go back to Pharaoh. He provided for us. They didn't put their trust in God. And we need to be careful that we don't do those things. If we put anything above the kingdom is no longer our priority. We fall into idolatry just like they did. And we've been consumed by lust. Now, we need to take heed of what happened to them, the children of Israel. They had the miraculous happen every day in their life. That cloud stayed there. Wind didn't blow it away. And at night, the fire was there. They received manna, quail. They received water from rocks. Yet they were still consumed by the world. We need to really think about that. They had God right there in front of them, and they still fell. That tells us how strong temptation is. That tells you how strong the world is. They didn't have the distractions we have. They had distractions, but not the same type. They didn't have TV. They didn't have the internet. They have Facebook, Twitter, all this stuff that puts junk in our lives. They didn't have that. They didn't have Snapchat, WhatsApp, Slack. They didn't have Sunday night football games, all these things. They weren't lured away by weekend fishing. They were in the middle of the wilderness. They didn't have a weekly paycheck to chase. They didn't have all their kids involved in activity after activity to pull us away, to be involved in things, to make us neglect what's important in life. They didn't have those things. They had God right there in front of them. And they still fail. And we need to look at that. And we need to take a serious account of ourselves. Say, are we really, really affected by the world or not? I mean, they were. If we can consider our condition in comparison to theirs, we have many distractions that we eagerly and willingly let in our lives. We go out and we actively pay for television. We go out and we actively pay hundreds of dollars for this thing. And then we pay more dollars to put apps on this thing that take up time and more time. What are we doing? As parents, are we trying to involve our kids in all these activities? Because we don't want them to feel like they're left out. And we don't want to feel like we're not giving them every advantage. At least that's how we feel, Robin and I. We're distracted by those things. There's so much distraction. But I want to focus on this little distraction right here. Because in our family, this is what we spend most of our time talking about. What's appropriate, what's not appropriate with this little thing. It's become intrusive in our lives. And I bring it up not to point out anything that anybody here is wrong, but I bring it up because I see it at work. I see it when we go eat at restaurants. The other day we're eating in a family next to us. Five people, every person was on one of these things. They never said a word to any of them. They were consumed by this. We went another time and they had this and earphones in. This thing is in our lives. We need to take heed and we need to check ourselves and see how it's affecting us. You know, it takes up our time, distracts us. We get our priorities on this thing sometimes. If we can't have it, we start to get a little uneasy. I was thinking about sending a mass text during this and just see who all grabbed for their phones. We just got to do it. No, we need to check ourselves. As parents, we need to think about this thing. Because when I was growing up, you know, we didn't have the freedoms that this thing gives us. If I wanted to talk on the phone, the phone in the house, well, it had a cable about this long on it, and it was tethered to the wall. If I wanted to talk to my girlfriend, I talked right there in the kitchen that was in the middle of the house. My dad was sitting right over there, and he could hear everything I said. If I wanted to watch the TV that was in the house, Mom and Dad were there. They could tell me, cover your eyes, don't look at that. This thing, is it the same way? No. Our kids can talk on this, they can text on this, they can do whatever on this, and we're okay. Y'all go over there, I don't want to listen to y'all. And as parents, I know we've done it. As long as y'all aren't arguing, man, y'all go. I want to hear it. It's great. But that's wrong. We've given up. We can't do that. It's our job as parents. I'm pointing to Robin here, not you, Sarah. And not you, Cletus. You're past this point in your life. It's our job as parents, our number one job, to raise our kids. Shepherd them through this life. This is a major distraction. Major distraction. The children of Israel had all these things in front of them that God put there. And we have all these things of the world in front of us that we choose to put in front of our eyes for this thing. We need to really check ourselves. Now, remember what it says in Proverbs, all those different ways. Don't go on the path. Don't follow the sin. Don't even go near it. Well, don't follow it. That's a very choice words when you think about this in social media. What do we follow on this thing? I'm afraid there's some things that are followed on this thing that'll lead us to hell if we're not careful. There are lustful things on this. And I hope our kids know that. And as parents, I hope we're talking to our kids because they need guidance with these things. They can lead us away. Lead us away. Kids, what are our attitudes when our parents try to talk to us about this? Well, that's great. But I'm not going to listen to you. I'm going to do whatever I want to. All my friends use this thing. You don't know what it's like. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. There's an absolute right and wrong. If you obey your parents in the Lord, that's right. If you disobey your parents in the Lord, that's wrong. And I always wondered, when you look at Romans 1 and you see how far the people fall and the horrible things that the people were involved in there, one thing that shows up in the list with the fornicators, adulterers, and the people that, homosexuality, all that stuff, something that shows up in that list is the parents, the children that are disobedient to parents. And that always thought that was weird and odd until I prepared for this lesson. Because children that are disobedient to parents are nothing more than people that are consumed in their own lust. They want to do what they want to do, and they're not going to be told any other way about it. And it's wrong. And we, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for that is what is right. Parents, bring up your children in nurturing admonition of the Lord. Sometimes our kids do the things that they're doing because we're doing it. We're doing it first. And sometimes we get guilty. I don't want to discipline them because I'm doing it myself. And I'd be a hypocrite if I did that. I'm in that boat sometimes. It's not right. It doesn't make it right. We need to check ourselves. God's made a way for us to avoid temptation, even when it concerns temptations that this thing puts in my life. What can I do? Jesus told me to poke out my eyes if I'm committing adultery with them. The least we can do if I'm doing that on this little thing is delete the app or get rid of the phone. That's a lot easier than poking out my eyes. But it's a consideration we better take into account if this thing is leading us in ways that are wrong. Romans 12:2 tells us don't be conformed to this world. Because when we're conformed to this world, Satan uses this world to get us. The closer we're conformed to it, the harder it is to get away from it. We don't need to do that. So taking consideration what Joey talked about this morning about people sliding their books out, go ahead and get your book and get the invitation song ready. Go ahead and do that now. I want everybody to listen to this last point. Go ahead and get your books. Joey talked about the invitation this morning. And I didn't talk a whole lot about Plan of Salvation tonight. I'm really talking to parents, kids that are Christians, that may be consumed with sin. Even if we're consumed with sin, even if we're doing things that are wrong, we have a God that has showed us so much grace and so much mercy. We have a God there that is sitting there with His hand extended to us, giving us a way to escape if we'll just grab His hand and take it. If we say we have no sin, Joey's talked about this morning, we deceive ourselves, the truth's not in us. If we say we have no sin, we call Him a liar. But if we confess our sins, He is faithful and He is just to forgive us our transgression. He can cleanse us from all of our unrighteousness if we will just do those things. It's not enough to say, I'm sorry, and to keep doing it. But we have to have a heart that wants to change. And Joey's talked about this time and time again. It's that mind. What are we going to do? Am I going to be converted? And am I going to have a true master? And that master is going to be my Lord? Or is that master going to be the world? That's what we have to make our minds up. And we have to make that change. If we have these things consuming us in our lives, we have to make a change. Get rid of it, run from it, whatever we got to do. But then we have to have this attitude in our heart, this attitude that we see in Psalm 51. The attitude that David had. Remember what he did? He looked down, he saw Bathsheba. The opportunity was put before him. He saw it. He didn't flee from it. He didn't put it away from himself, but he looked on it. And that lust, when it conceived, it brought forth sin. And that sin, when it had conceived, it brought forth death, physical and spiritual, for David if he didn't change. He had her husband killed. His firstborn son died because of all of this. But when Nathan went to him and told him, you are the man, and he convicted him, we see David broken. And we see his thoughts here in Psalm 51. This is what he said. This is the kind of attitude we need to have when we have sin in our lives and we recognize we need to change. Lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, if they got a hold of us, we need to make sure that we don't let the pride of life get in our way. The pride of life makes it where we don't want to admit that we're wrong. We don't want to come forward and say that, you know, I did something wrong. Instead, we need to have this attitude right here that David had. And this is what he says. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness. According to the multitude of your tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquities and cleanse me from my sins. For I acknowledge my transgression and my sin is ever before me. Against thee, God, thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight. No matter what we think we do, no matter how good we think we can hide our sin, God always knows. And when we sin, it is against him. He is our master. Against thee, thee only have I sinned and done this evil in thy sight, that thou mightest be justified when thou speak and be clear when you judge. Behold, I was shapen in iniquity and in sin, and my mother conceived me. Behold, thou desirest truth in the inward parts, and in the hidden part you shall make me to know wisdom. Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. Make me to hear joy and gladness, that the bones which thou hast broken may rejoice. Hide thy face from my sins. Blot out all my iniquities. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Cast me not away from thy presence, and take not thy Holy Spirit from me. Restore unto me the joy of thy salvation, and uphold me with thy free spirit. Then will I teach transgressors thy ways, and sinners shall be converted unto thee. Deliver me from blood guiltiness. O God, thou God of my salvation, and my tongue shall sing aloud of thy righteousness. O Lord, open my lips, and my mouth shall show forth thy praise. For thou desirest not sacrifice, else I would give it. Thou delightest not in burnt offerings. The sacrifices of God are a broken spirit, a broken and contrite heart. O God, thou wilt not despise. When we find these things in our lives, this is the attitude we need to have. We need to go before God broken. Broken. And getting rid of the world. And realizing that we have a true master. Stephen. Chris. We need to realize that. That we have a real master. And have this heart that David had. 1 John 1 goes on to say, the blood of Christ can cleanse us from all sins if we walk in the light as he is in the light. If we walk in the spirit, we won't fulfill the lust of the flesh. These things go hand in hand. So even in the face of despair, even if I'm overcome with sin, God is there. His hand is reached out to help us, to pull us out of that condition if we will only take it, if we will only do what's necessary to escape. May God give us the strength to do what's right, no matter what the cost is to us, so that we may hear those wonderful words one day. Well done, thy good and faithful servant. Enter ye in to the joys of the Lord. If you have any need, won't you please come now as we stand and sing.